Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Empty Set Entertainment presents Slay, created by Scott Sigler and Rob Otto, performed by Scott Sigler. This story is intended for mature audiences only. Listener discretion is advised. Good day, Junkie. A bit of a longer intro today, but it's interesting stuff, so bear with me. Oh my gosh, we're making so many improvements to our podcasting process. The experiment of doing a live stream every Wednesday, then ripping that live audio straight from the live stream, editing it, putting in the feed as a podcast episode, that is probably over. With the streaming, we have been having a ton of various tech issues. It's become more of a headache than anything else. So we're still going to keep doing the Wednesday stream, and we're going to keep reading you the story live. You get to see me read brand new fiction live almost every single Wednesday. But again, those tech issues. So we've solved those tech issues with a new computer that has no fan noise and by removing some goddamn LED light strings that were up in my office for atmosphere. You know what 20 to 30 to 40 feet of really thin electrical wire put up on a wall is? It's lights, yes, but also a fucking antenna. It was part of a buzz problem we could not seem to get rid of because it fluctuated going in and out. We couldn't figure out what it was. Now we've gotten rid of the fan noise from the computer. We've removed the giant AM antenna I put up in my office, and everything's going good. Our rig here sounds so damn quiet now, it is great. But Scott, if you solved all the problems, what's the issue with going ahead and using that live audio? Well, for two episodes, the audio problems were so bad from the live stream, we had to re-record the episode the next day, straight into Logic Pro, Apple's recording software. I've been using it for about 20 years. But by doing that fix, we had us a little Bob Ross, happy accident. Recording the next day, I realized I can do all of the retakes, and if I flub a line or I don't get a character voice right, I can do that in real time on Thursday when I'm rereading the episode. But also, by recording the next day, I can stop what I'm doing at any time, review my recordings of the various character voices, and make sure I'm doing that consistently from episode to episode. I feel character voice consistency is very important for my style of narration. Character voices are part of the show when I do the podcast or I do the audiobook. And of course, these voices aren't legendary, but they are hopefully distinctive because my goal is when I do a voice, you know which character is talking. By recording the next day, it really helps get that dialed in. But also, I can correct any typos or clumsy sentences in real time. I write the chapter. I export that chapter's manuscript to a program called Teleprompter. Teleprompter puts it up on the screen where I'm recording auto scrolls while I read along for the live stream. If I'm doing a live stream and I found any typos or other problems, I couldn't stop it to fix those errors or to fix any continuity breaks or a poorly written sentence, anything like that. By the time I finish a live read, and after a scotch or two I like to have with you when we do the live streams on Wednesday nights, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, I forget most little fixes that need to be made. Now, when I finish the reread, everything is super tight, very high quality. So what does this mean? The new process is Wednesday nights, do the live stream, then come back Thursday morning, re-record the same chapters I read for the live stream, but have a much better recording of those. That is what will go into the podcast. Now, let's get you to the story so far, and then we're all going to do our part. Previously on Slay, Teddy Two Fingers missed his shot at kidnapping Delilah Droman, who he wanted as his foreman in his malevolent, nightmare-harvesting operation. Can he find a replacement candidate? Delilah's father, Kelleas Droman, hired Lincoln as Delilah's bodyguard. When Kelleas hunts Teddy Two Fingers or trains Billy in the use of magic, Lincoln must stay at the Droman mansion and protect young Delilah. Surprisingly, Lincoln and Delilah have hit it off. She trusts he can keep her safe, while he benefits from her optimism and youthful energy that he can't experience from his own child, Sam, who remains trapped on the shelf where Teddy put him. Billy's training with Kelleas goes on at Kelleas' facility, the Nonagon, in the mystical city of Cordis. Billy needs to find his loom, the structure upon which he can channel a powerful, innate magic that courses through his body. And Ariella has the medallion she sent Link and Billy to acquire from the troglodyte in Tollingwood. What can this talisman do? You're about to find out next on Slay, episode 53. Teddy Two Fingers watched the Thuan Ghoul silently jog away from the wooden chalet, keeping to the nighttime shadows. What little light there was played off the hilts of the half-dozen daggers she wore and the Shack 12 held in ready position against her combat vest. The Thuan Ghoul, whose name was Amethysta Sornix, moved toward Teddy, where he sat with Hymana on the clandestine carpet beneath an oak tree. Romania was nice this time of year, even if the nights did get a bit chilly.
"I hate that we have to use these fools," Hymana said. "Thuan Ghouls are so ugly."
Teddy couldn't argue there. Thuan Ghouls made orcs look downright sexy by comparison.
"They're not here for their looks," he said. "Even if Agnetha was ready, we need numbers in case that jizz squirt Franks shows up again. Thuan Ghouls keep their mouth shut, and they do the work they're paid to do. You got to spend money to make money."
Hymana gave her red kimono a tug.
"Try spending money for a dental plan," she said. "At least some free floss."
Amethysta reached them. She didn't salute or any of that happy horseshit. Thuan Ghouls didn't roll that way. Instead, her eyes darted this way and that, even as she spoke, always on the lookout for danger.
"The parents are asleep," Amethysta said. "So is the girl."
Free floss. A great idea. There were chunks of shredded meat, and maybe a bit of spinach, stuck in Amethysta's sharp yellow teeth. That, and her puckered, enamel-dotted, puke gray skin, made her look like an undead hybrid of human and gecko.
"Excellent," Teddy said. "Defenses?"
Amethysta glanced over her shoulder at the house.
"Some strong wards," she said. "Too strong for us. There's two bodyguards. Looks like former military. Sidearms. One's snoring. Shouldn't be a problem if we can get inside."
Teddy glanced at Hymana.
"Can you sense the wards?"
She stretched a hand toward the house. Road lights played off her glossy red nails.
"I can denude them, but not destroy them," she said. "We will have a window of, 5 minutes or so."
Teddy didn't like the phrase "or so." His was a business of precision, not estimates. Estimates got people caught. Or dead. He was a fan of neither. Still, even if it was only 3 minutes, he could get the job done. In and out before the master of the house awoke.
"We go in, get the girl, and get out," Teddy said.
Amethysta's wide mouth twitched as she sucked at the piece of meat wedged between her fangs.
"We can do that," she said. "Kill the parents."
Teddy shook his head.
"No, it's always best to leave someone alive who can pay up, if I ever choose to sell."
"As you wish," Amethysta said. "What about the bodyguards? They look delicious."
Like Teddy could give a shit about bodyguards. They couldn't pay for anything.
"They're yours," he said. "But make it quick and quiet. Hymana, take out those wards. Let's get our new foreman."
"Man, that is a lot of ice,"
Billy said. A small tower of the stuff rested heavily on the sand of Kellius Droman's Nonagon. Coffin-size blocks of it, stacked up as tall as a house like frigid, oversized Legos.
You have a lot of heat in you, Droman said. Hence you will work with ice until you're ready for more flammable targets.
Billy was going to get to use his power instead of enduring that stupid pylon of pain. He could barely contain his excitement.
Man, I'm ready. Just show me what to do.
Droman held up a finger.
First, we must discuss your loom, he said. As I told you before, think of it as a framework or a theme around which to mentally focus your natural filaments. My loom, as you know,
he raised an upturned palm. A thorny vine grew out of it, waggled like a tentacle.
Involves the botanical world. My loom helps me focus my internal power, and it provides an ongoing structure for the fiber and meshwork I create.
He flicked his fingers. The vine sprang free from his palm, dove to the sand, and burrowed in like a snake. Just like that, it was gone.
Man, that's sick, Billy said. What's my loom?
That is up to you, William. You're early enough in the process, you could choose almost anything. But choose wisely. Once you commit, it becomes increasingly more difficult to change your mind. Billy thought of Grandma's lemon-yellow lightning blast. Was her loom lightning? Electricity? Could he make weather his loom? Movie superheroes gave him no end of ideas. Could he base his powers on water? On ice? Magnetism? Light? Too many to choose from.
How soon do I have to decide?
As soon as possible, Droman said.
Right now, your natural power seems to manifest as heat and flame. If you want to change that, we need to know now.
Billy thought of his training session with Magda. How she'd said fire was a manifestation of his endless supply of frustration.
Fire's one of the elements, he said. Right? Like in that movie, The Fifth Element?
I don't watch movies, and there are only four elements.
Well, yeah, but in that movie, there's a fifth. Never mind. Fire's one of the four elements. Could my loom be elements in general? Like all of them?
Droman always had a cold look about him, like your existence didn't matter to him one way or another. Billy wondered if the man had ever smiled.
A loom of one element alone would be a lifetime's work to master, Droman said. Choosing all four will dilute your efforts and make you a charlatan capable of little more than parlor tricks. Magic is not something where you can just wave your hand and make anything happen, William. It takes work. Discipline. It takes focus.
Discipline. Focus. Droman sounded like Grandma when she lectured Billy about studying for class. And all that time, Grandma controlled fucking lightning. But she had flown, too. Like Storm from X-Men. Storm. There was another Storm character from comic books, though, one Billy had thought of during that same talk with Magda. Johnny Storm. The Human Torch.
If I'm already manifesting fire stuff, could I just stick with that?
Droman frowned. As someone whose loom is based on plants, fire is not on my list of most desired traits. But it will move you ahead faster to go with what you've already got, so to speak. Are you sure that's what you want? Billy thought about it, started to second-guess himself, but he shut that down. He could harness the destructive power that had almost burned down the old stone church twice and bend it to his will? Badass. How awesome would it be if he could control the primal element of fire? Very fucking awesome.
Yeah, he said. I'm sure.
Droman sighed, glanced at the thick, intertwined wooden walls of his training ground.
Very well. I'll have to take extra precautions. But if the flame is what forms you, William, the flame is what forms you. Are you ready to begin?
Billy was more than ready. But before he got started, there was something else he wanted to know.
Almost, he said. Can I ask you a question that relates to Lincoln real quick?
Droman arched an eyebrow.
You can't ask him yourself?
Billy wanted to, but he had a feeling Lincoln didn't want to talk about this particular subject. There was Magda and Ariella, But if Billy asked them, it might get back to Link. Link had enough troubles. He didn't need to worry about Billy. Worry more about Billy, that was.
You know more about magic than anyone I know, Billy said.
Without a doubt. Ask your question.
Can you tell me what the shelf is? Link's kid is trapped there. Why can't he go get him? Is it like purgatory or something?
Droman's head leaned back slightly. Thinking, he glanced up to the green crystal hanging high above the 20-foot-tall obsidian obelisk that rose from the center of the sprawling, sand-covered floor.
The shelf, he said. It's complicated. And to be honest with you, it's something few fully understand, myself included. Yes, in a way it's like purgatory. It is a realm separate from the patchwork, a realm ruled by dark creatures that were ancient long before the gods of Earth first formed. It's a place where predators feed on fear as well as flesh. Only certain individuals can go there, and fewer still can go there safely. Time is different there, William. One of the worst punishments one can receive is to be transported to the shelf. There, even one such as me is nothing more than prey to be hunted down and tortured. Relentlessly. I've heard that death on the shelf can take years, decades, sometimes centuries.
That was where Lincoln's son was. Billy had never met the boy, never even seen a picture of him, but his heart broke for Sam and Lincoln, both.
Police have some kind of deal to keep Sam safe there, Billy said. How can she do that?
Droman's lips pressed into a hard, thin line.
Callista is an affinitas, like me, like you, he said. But she has studied the dark ways, and has made connections to the abhorrent beings that live on the shelf. Frankly, I do not know how she keeps Sam safe there. That woman is pure poison, William. Do not get involved with her.
Easy enough advice to follow. Billy would avoid her like the plague if he could help it.
I will, he said. But what about Teddy Two Fingers? If the shelf is such a weird place, how did he send Lincoln's son there?
A low, almost inaudible growl sounded from Droman's throat. His eyes darkened with hatred.
I don't know how Two Fingers did that, he said. When I find him, I will learn. Before he dies, alone and screaming and begging for his life, he will tell me everything he knows.
As if Billy didn't need yet another reminder to not cross Kellyus Droman.
That's enough extraneous conversation, Droman said. My time is valuable. Are you ready to start the lesson?
Billy rubbed his hands together.
I sure am, Mr. Droman. What do I do first?
Droman pointed to the blocks of ice.
You're going to try and melt that, but before you do,
he pointed to the obsidian obelisk.
Put your hand on there.
Billy shrank inside. Another round with the pylon of pain. Awesome. But if he had to endure that agony to learn how to use fucking fire, he would. Because Vestinian was out there, somewhere, looking for him. Billy reached out and he put his palm against the obelisk.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
On a remote island in frigid Lake Superior, a fabricated creature birthed from the mind of a disturbed genius stalks the very people who created it. Ancestor, by number one New York Times bestselling author Scott Sigler, is a classic tale of science gone horribly wrong. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
Had it really come to this? OMG, Delilah Drummond said. It looks so cool.
Lincoln gritted his teeth as he watched her run the nail polish brush down his left index finger, leaving a trail of shiny, wet black in its wake.
Yeah, he said. I'm so goth, I should write an emo song.
He waited for a laugh, but Delilah looked up at him, confused.
Emo? What's that?
Lincoln realized he wasn't sure how to define it. Black nails and eyeliner. There was that one group with the stupid drum major uniforms.
Oh, like My Chemical Romance. You have a chemical romance? Like, with caffeine?
It's a band. Good God, was he getting old.
Never mind.
Delilah laughed.
I'm teasing. I know what emo is, and you don't need black nails. You already have the look down.
What do you mean? She stopped painting.
Now you're teasing. You wear a dark hooded cloak, Lincoln. And sometimes you have that mystical black eyeshadow on your face.
Mystical black eyeshadow? That is the haze of Simeril. It lets me see things that... She was giggling, her eyes gleaming with delight.
Goddamn kids.
You're making fun of me, Lincoln said.
Only a little. You do dress pretty goth, though.
Lincoln glanced at his cloak, his armor.
They're work clothes, he said.
Delilah moved on to his ring finger. The nail painting looked ridiculous, but it made her happy. She couldn't hide her pure joy at the small act, and her joy was contagious. She'd assured him she had plenty of nail polish remover on hand. As long as Magda, Billy, Ariella, or any other person in existence besides Delilah didn't see it, what was the harm?
I need to give you a manicure next, Delilah said. Your nails are so cringe.
Cringe? Was that a bad thing? Judging from the context, it was a bad thing.
I focus my energy in a lot of places, Lincoln said. My nails aren't one of them. It shows.
How did you talk me into this again? He knew how, but he also knew the answer would delight her anew. She spoke in a sing-song voice.
Because your motorcycle is here.
She dipped the brush in the vial and moved to his pinky.
And it looks awesome.
Lincoln couldn't stop his smile. The Volt Lakama did look awesome. Dark, flat gray, everything. Quiet as a whisper. Bigger seat than his ruined Verge TS. Custom meshwork sealed hardbox. Meshwork self-driving controls. No more cabs, no more Uber. And, thank all the gods and all the patchwork, no more buses. For that, Lincoln could tolerate a little nail polish.
The motorcycle is so beautiful, Delilah said. Are you sure we can't go for a ride?
Say one thing for Delilah Drummond. The girl didn't take no for an answer.
You know we can't, Lincoln said. It's too dangerous out there.
Taking Delilah from the relative safety of the mansion would expose her to Teddy Two Fingers. Lincoln knew damn well that asshole was out there, somewhere, waiting for a chance to snag her.
That's a bunch of bullshit, Delilah said.
Hey, language.
She rolled her eyes. Like you can lecture anyone on language, Lincoln?
That's a fair point.
Daddy told me Teddy kidnapped Gabriella Radu last night.
Radu? As in Bogdan Radu?
Delilah nodded. She's 9. I met her at a summer camp in Paris.
The 9-year-old daughter of a powerful mage. Not Droman's level of power, not even close, but still.
It's sad, Delilah said. And scary. What does Teddy do with kids like me anyway?
Lincoln stiffened, reared back slightly. Delilah looked up at him, her eyes wide, her hands frozen where they were before he'd pulled away.
Did I say something wrong?
Lincoln put his hand back down in front of her.
No, you didn't say anything wrong.
Not intentionally, anyway. She didn't know about Sam. She didn't know about Lincoln's failure to protect his own.
I figured your dad would tell you what Teddy wants, Lincoln said. He hasn't?
Delilah shook her head, moved on to the next nail. Maybe Droman thought she was too young to know. Well, tough titties for him. Delilah was a target, and as such, she deserved to know the score.
Teddy has a factory, I guess you'd call it, somewhere, Lincoln said. He keeps kids locked up. Do you know what a dream gaunt is?
Delilah stopped painting.
Daddy told me about them. They infect people's dreams and feed on their nightmares. They're from the shelf, right?
Lincoln didn't want to talk about this, not one bit, but he would, for her.
That's right, he said. Teddy has some kind of connection to the shelf. No one is sure exactly what that connection is. He keeps kids locked up and uses dream gaunts to make them afraid, then harvests the filaments created by their fear and their terror. Probably wants you because you have a lot of innate power, like your dad does.
And like Billy does.
That's right, Lincoln said. But Billy's too old for Teddy's operation.
Delilah thought on that for a moment. She dipped the brush into the vial and started painting again.
Daddy can't find Teddy, she said. He's scanned everywhere, even called in favors from other mages. No luck. He says Teddy has to have a really good hiding spot.
An understatement, if there ever was one. Lincoln had been hunting that piece of shit for years. The closest he'd ever come was confronting Teddy at this very mansion when he had tried to snatch this very girl. And Lincoln had failed to catch the man. Another failure in a long list of them. Delilah switched to his other hand.
So, she said, when will Ariella find out what the amulet does? She seems kind of pushy.
Lincoln huffed a laugh.
Girl, you don't know the half of it.
Delilah clearly wanted to change the subject. Lincoln was only too happy to comply. He told her about the troglodyte bounty. For the first time, she'd seemed interested in him talking about a hunt.
I don't know, he said. She's got to figure out if it does what it's supposed to do, whatever that is.
If it doesn't work, will she tell you what it was supposed to do?
Probably not, Lincoln said. That's fine with me. I don't want to count chickens that would have never hatched in the first place.
Delilah stopped painting, looked up at him.
I am so proud of you, she said. The way you and Billy didn't kill Pluka, awesome. And you even learned his name.
She bent to her painting. Lincoln felt warmth blossom in his chest. Delilah was proud of him? He wouldn't have thought the opinion of some random kid would matter to him, but it did. With this kid, anyway. If he couldn't hear words like that from his own child, at least he could hear them from her.
Thank you, he said.
Delilah finished his last nail. She put the brush back in the vial, then clapped her hands like, well, like an excited little girl.
It looks so great, she said. Now, Lincoln, let's talk about painting your toenails to match.
Magda had loved the old couch, but for sentimental reasons. Link found it on the sidewalk with a free sign on it shortly after Magda moved into the old stone church. The old couch had been familiar. Comfort-ing, but not comfortable,
The new couch, though, was comfortable as hell. And it was a perfect fit for three. Four, if you count a dragon who was sitting on Billy's lap, staring intently at the bowl of popcorn on the armrest to Billy's right.
"Man, I love the bugs in this flick," Billy said as he shoved popcorn into his mouth. "A movie with aliens that really look alien, not like 8-foot-tall blue NBA centers with tails that fuck animals."
"Hey," Lincoln said, "are you bagging on Avatar? I like that movie."
"Avatar?"
Magda shook her head, put a few pieces from her own bowl into her mouth.
"I think you mean Pocahontas in space, Link. Ain't that what you mean?"
"Dances with Smurfs," Billy said. "That movie's trash, Link. Dope effects, though." Lincoln shook his head, slumped deeper into the couch, fed another piece of popcorn to Shitbird, who perched on the other armrest. Magda sat in the middle, perfectly perpendicular to the big screen that showed the carnage on Klondothu in Starship Troopers. All in all, it was a rare, good day. Billy had returned from his training session with Droman, hurting just as much as the first time, but this time, he was happy. He was already making progress. That was good. The kid had so much raw power in that big, sexy body. And Link, too, was in a surprising mood. Not happy, per se, but not totally in the dumps, either. Being around that Droman girl seemed to make his spirits lighter. He still had that molten core of anger inside, though. Some things never changed. Magda had had a good day as well. She tidied up the workshop, cleaned ding-dong big schlong, and gotten in some gunpowder therapy in the shooting range. Her physical conditioning had long since gone to shit, but not her shooting skills. If she ever got back in the field... She shook off the thought. No need to worry about that now, not with the two people she loved the most in the world on either side of her.
"Here we go," Billy said. "I love it when this guy gets his leg bit off. Time to get it."
"Gross," Lincoln said. "Shitbird, help me out." A black wing unfolded, covered Lincoln's eyes. Link, the murder machine who killed nasty monsters for a living, couldn't bring himself to watch the gorier parts of a horror movie. He was so damned adorable that way. A sudden clatter echoed through the nave, the sound of high heels rushing down wooden steps.
"Ariel has found something," Link said. "Mags, pause this."
Magda leaned forward to the laptop, paused the movie. Dragon shot off Billy's lap and scampered out of the nave's open door a few seconds before Ariella rushed in with her short little high heel steps, her eyes wide, her mouth hanging open. She clutched the stone medallion Lincoln and Billy had recovered in both hands, running her thumbs along the rough surface.
"Calm down," Billy said. "You're gonna break an ankle running in those things."
Ariella skidded to a stop in front of the couch, blurry, paused yellow and green soldier bugs on the screen behind her.
"It works. I mean, it will work."
She let out a ragged breath.
"When I saw the drawing of this in the binder, I thought I recognized the style. I wasn't sure then, but I am sure now. It will work."
"Good to know," Lincoln said.
"What will work exactly?"
Ariella's thumbs continued to rub the amulet as if she was slowly polishing the thing.
"It's a conduit," she said. "Rare mesh that will allow astral projection to a place where most can't go. But you have to know, Lincoln, it can only be used once. When you burn its mesh, that's it. You can't go back."
Why was she so damn nervous? It wasn't like her at all.
"Go back where?" Lincoln asked.
Ariella looked at him, excitement sizzling in her eyes.
"To the shelf," she said. "Lincoln, this medallion will let you visit Sam."
You have been listening to Slay, created by Scott Sigler and Rob Otto. Performed by Scott Sigler. Copyright 2024, Empty Set Entertainment. For more info on Scott Sigler, his novels, short stories, and podcasts, visit scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song They're Watching Me by the band Super Weapon.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.